found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez, and welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, heard here daily on LATalkRadio.com. Thank you so much for joining us. It's Thursday, May 2nd. The time is 9 o'clock. We're live Monday through Friday from 9 to 9:50 on LATalkRadio.com, and then later on in the day, we post the archives of the program. You can log on to the MariaSanchezShow.com. Click on today's podcast. You'll have to scroll down a bit, suffer through my bio, and then you can see where Sam Hessen, who is the owner of LA Talk Radio, puts the podcasts for your convenience. So you can listen on demand. You can get the free app and download it onto your iPhone or your Android and take us with you wherever you go. We are going to be speaking in just a few moments with the public information officer for the Ventura County Fire Department. His name is Bill Nash. There's a fire going on at the moment, and we're going to get the latest. And as we said, we talk about things in general on this program, but when we can, we focus on Ventura County as much as possible because nobody does. I always say if there isn't a flood or mud, nobody cares about what goes on in Ventura County. I mean, obviously the people that live and work there do, but so we're trying to help out in that regard. You can like us on Facebook, The Maria Sanchez Show. You can follow us on Twitter, Maria Sanchez Show. LinkedIn, you know, all the usual things. So we always start out the program with the five stories that you need to know about so that you can be conversant with what's going on right now. And, of course, the Boston Marathon bombing is still in the news, as well it should be. Three students were charged with undermining the Boston bomb probe. They're all buddies of the younger brother who is still recovering from the wounds that he suffered. And they are charged with conspiring to obstruct justice by disposing of a backpack containing the fireworks they found in his dorm room. And there was a laptop, too. So the thing is, apparently they didn't know about the event prior. So this is afterwards the fallout is with. And on April 18th, three days after the bombings, when the authorities released the pictures of the two men, his three classmates figured out that their friend was one of the suspects after they saw the picture, and one of them texted him to say that he resembled the suspect, and the response from the younger brothers was, LOL, you better not text me, come to my room and take whatever you want. So obviously they knew something was up. And the bummer about these three guys is they could have turned him in, or they could have said, we know who he is, or we know is no. Not only did they not do that, they helped cover up some of the stuff, and they didn't go to the authorities. So none of them entered a plea yesterday, so that's unfolding as we speak. Some good news. First-time claims for unemployment benefits fell to their lowest level in 5 years last week. That's marking the lowest level since January of 2008. The number was 324,000 people filed claims. At the height in 2009, that number was as high as 670,000 a week. So the Labor Department releases its monthly jobs report tomorrow morning, but everyone's saying it's starting to look like we're in recovery for sure. We mentioned yesterday this story about a woman who had a face transplant surgery. She held a news conference at the Boston's Brigham and Women's Hospital yesterday, and she spoke publicly for the first time. She had the face transplant performed in February, so this is the first time she's going public. In 2007, she was attacked by her now ex-husband, who believed that she was seeing another man. So police say he went to the house looking for that man, then went into a fury, hitting her with a bat and pouring lye from a squeeze bottle onto her face. I saw the before the incident, after the incident, and then the face transplant pictures, and the damage he did to her face is, be warned if you look for it. It's just amazing and unfathomable that one human being could do that to another. especially when they were once in love. They said when police arrived, she was trying to crawl into a shower to wash away the chemical, which had already distorted her face. So the dude, his name is Herbert Rogers, in 2009 pled guilty, thank goodness, to maiming her, and he got a prison sentence of at least 30 years. So the face transplant surgery that happened in February involved more than 30 surgeons, anesthesiologists, and nurses who worked for 15 hours to replace her skin, muscles, tendons, and nerves. Now, how did she get a face transplant? Because somebody donated their face, obviously. So if you haven't signed up to be an organ donor, I would strongly recommend that you do, because look at what happened with this woman. This the face donor was a woman named Cheryl Ryder. She died of a sudden stroke. Ryder's daughter met the recipient yesterday and said she looked beautiful, adding she was certain her mother had somehow picked this woman as the her face was going to go to. They're both mothers. They're both survivors. They're both beacons of light. And she, this is a quote from the daughter. Pardon me. This is kind of emotional for me. I get to feel my mother's skin again. I get to see my mother's freckles. And through you, I get to see my mother live on. This is truly a blessing. And then the greatest part of this whole story is that this woman, whose name is Carmen Blandin Tarleton of Thetford, Vermont, has found love. She went for piano lessons, and the piano teacher fell in love with her, with her face all scarred up. So you want to talk about skin deep? I think that's just amazing. Again, in the news, we mentioned this yesterday, and it's still in the middle of a contretemps. The FDA on yesterday appealed the court order directing the agency to make the morning after pill emergency contraceptives available without a prescription to all girls of reproductive age. So it's in limbo again. So this is Plan B that we're talking about. It's if taken up to 120 hours after unprotected sex, it's designed to prevent pregnancy, but it works best within 24 hours. Right now you have to have a prescription, and they're wanting to make it over the counter to all women. So it's been going on. There was a suit that was filed in April, and then there was another suit that was filed a long time ago in 2005 by the Center for Reproductive Rights, asking to strike down the age and access limits to the emergency contraception. So that story is still unfolding. And then finally, we won't get to it now because we're going to talk to Bill Nash, but Warren Buffett is in the news, and in such an amazing way. He's 82 years old, and he wrote a piece that's going to be published in May 20th issue of Fortune magazine, and he's talking about the value and the contributions that women make to the success. So, but now we're going to talk with Bill Nash, who is the public information officer for the Ventura County Fire Department, about the latest with the fire.
Fire information. This is Bill.
Hi, Bill. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live and on the air of the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you for taking the call.
Yes.
I was just curious if you had an update about the fire for our listeners.
At this point, the fire is at about 100 acres. There's still no containment. We have more than 200 firefighters either on the ground or en route. We're attacking the fire on the ground with the firefighters from Ventura County, the city of Ventura, the city of Oxnard, Cal Fire, and we have both water-dropping helicopters and retardant-dropping air tankers on scene and working the fire as well.
Do you have a sign of what might have started it?
No.
And what do you, is mutual aid involved?
Yes, we have three other fire agencies working with us.
Okay. And anything about traffic that we should let folks know about?
Highway 101 is very congested due to firefighting activities. We suggest an alternate route if possible.
Okay. Anything else, Bill?
Nope, that's it.
Okay. Thanks for your time, Bill. Appreciate
it. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bill Nash, Public Information Officer for the Ventura County Fire Department. And he, we have worked together on various things over the years because I am also a public information officer for Ventura County. And I attend meetings that we meet like, let's see, we used to meet every other month. Yes, every other month, and now we meet every quarter. And it's just to get all the public folks who do and represent agencies and cities together in the same room and share what's going on with you know, what's happening in our agencies. So now we are going to speak with Lance Orozco. Lance is joining us to talk about an award that he received. Let's see if that... I think I got there. Yes, this is the right number. I am technically challenged, so the fact that I am doing this on my own, I run my own board, that's not an issue. It's just the tricks of the trade with the computer. If we don't get him here, we'll call him on his cell phone.
Hi there. You've reached Lance Orozco with KCLU News. I'm not in.
So I'm going to try him now on his cell phone. So here, this is Raw Radio, right? Live and Raw. So pardon the interruption. He could have been. Oh, he might even be covering the fire. That just occurred to me because Lance is the news director at KCLU. And since the fire is a big thing in Ventura County, because KCLU covers Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. And he's the news director there, and this would be news. So that means...
Hello, this is Lance.
Lance, it's Maria Sanchez.
How are you?
I'm good. Are you covering the fire?
I am.
Okay, that's why I didn't reach you in your office.
Yes, it's about 100 acres plus, so growing.
And where are you?
I'm actually at the golf course in Camarillo Springs, which is sort of at the base of where the fire is. And it's just sort of interesting. The LA County Fire Department is here, and they're using the lakes here to get water for the water drop in helicopter.
Well, and we just spoke to Bill Nash, who, as you know, is the PIO for the Ventura County Fire Department, to get a little update. So now you're giving us another update.
Yes. Bill gave you a pretty good wrap-up of what's going on, but the traffic, there's one thing I should mention, traffic is backed up on the southbound 101. If you're headed southbound, it's backed up for probably about 10 miles.
Oh.
People are getting about a half hour delay there. The fire kind of flared up right next to the freeway just a couple of minutes ago. And in fact, I can see where my vantage point. I can see cars are basically on a complete standstill.
Oh, okay, so everyone, if you're listening now and live, stay away from the 101 South.
Yes, 101 South is pretty bad. Ironically, if you're headed north on the 101, people who are getting ready to jump on the freeway, it's pretty clear sailing until you get on the grade itself. The grade is smooth sailing through the area once you get past the fire area, but the northbound traffic really isn't backed up at all, but southbound. Yes, but these huge plumes of smoke, and it's really windy. We're seeing wind gusts like in the 30 to 40 mile an hour range. It looks like this wind is going to continue through the next couple of hours. And I think that's the biggest problem firefighters face. The good news is that, as Bill just told you, there are no homes in immediate danger. Although if you watch, you know, on television, it looks like, you know, that some of the homes could be in danger. But firefighters doing a really good job of providing structure protection. And no homes damaged at this point, Maria.
Okay, Lance. You turned into news director mode.
I did. I know we were originally supposed to talk about something a little different this morning, but this is sort of the way it goes in the news. This is you well know. I'm not sure if you can hear me. I'm about 50 yards away from where an LA County fire helicopter is setting down to pick up water. And it's just really interesting because there's golfers out here on this golf course right now, and they're, you know, trying to get the golf in at the same time because the fire's, you know, relatively a safe distance away. But this helicopter's kind of swooping in on a golf team and picking up water out of the lake. It's kind of a pretty spectacular show
so
for these golfers.
The wind is not affecting the helicopters?
You know what? I'm sure for the pilots, it's got to make things a little bit more difficult. These guys are good. It's the best thing I can tell you, because I'm sure these destinations are dangerous. Especially, you know, you've got some very, very steep terrain here, which has got to make the wind even more difficult for the helicopter guys.
Wow.
But, the pilots of these choppers are very experienced. They're used to these kind of conditions, and they know how to deal with it. But it definitely is buffeting the helicopter around right now. You can see it bouncing as it picks up water.
Is there a wind advisory?
I'm sorry, so I couldn't hear you there.
Is there a wind advisory?
In fact, there's a red flag warning in effect for much of Southern California. And your listeners, I'm not sure whether they caught on to this, but aside from the fire that we had burning yesterday out of the Inland Empire, there's a new one in Rancho Cucamonga that just started in the last hour. And that's going to create yet another problem because firefighting resources, even though they're sort of geared up this time of year, there's sort of a tug of war going on over who gets the air tankers and who gets the extra aircraft, because air tankers are sort of like gold when it comes to dealing with firefighting.
And
we can deal with brush fires. And I know that when this took fire in Ventura County first started during the first hour or so they couldn't get an air tanker because the air tankers were tied up elsewhere. And we do have one air tanker that's on this fire right now.
Interesting. Well, and the reception gets you just got better. I can hear you actually now. So should I keep you away from your job and we can talk about your honor later?
You know what? I've got a minute. It's up to you. I know you've got other guests and other things that are going on right now. And the reason it got quieter is the helicopter just left.
Okay.
So the helicopter just zipped off to drop off some water here. But we can certainly talk about other things if you want.
Okay, because if Lance is new, if you are new to the World Wide Web for our program, he's the news director at KCLU-FM, and he's been a broadcast journalist in California for more than three decades. Quite the career you've had. I didn't realize you were a USC grad, Lance.
I'm sorry, that I was what?
That you're a USC grad.
Oh, yeah, I went to USC. I'm a Trojan. So,
yeah, fight on.
Ironically, my wife is on the faculty at UCLA, so that creates a little bit of tension during certain times of the year, especially, of course, during football season.
Yeah, of course. So fight on. So he's worked with ABC in Santa Barbara, Fox in Sacramento, KCBS here in Los Angeles, KNBC in Los Angeles, and your longest tenure, I guess, has been at KCLU. Is that correct?
Yes. It just kind of passed. I was in Santa Barbara for about 10 years, and now I've been at KCLU for a little over 11 years.
11 years.
And I did television for about 15 or 16 years, and now I've been back into radio where I started for the last decade.
And the reason that we're speaking with Lance this morning is because the Society of Professional Journalists is awarding him the Sigma Delta Chi Award for Excellence in Journalism for your story chronicling your battle with kidney cancer. So,
it was a sort of an interesting situation to be in because one of the things that I do is, my job is to talk to people about their experiences and what's happened to them in their lives and report on this in the community that affects people. And in my particular case, I found out over a year ago, it was actually about May of last year, that I had a tumor in one of my kidneys. And I thought about it a little bit. I thought, I'm always asking people about, what's going on in their lives and asking them to open up to talk to me about things. And I thought it was only fair to tell my story at the same time, to basically open up in a way that I have people do all the time when I report on the radio station. And so I basically took listeners kind of along for the journey. And when I went to the doctor's office, and as I was getting a full diagnosis, and then when I actually underwent surgery last September, we actually took the recorders into the operating room, and of course I was out. I was out for about 4 hours, but we recorded the surgery, and then we took my microphones along again about 2 weeks later, as the doctor actually had my biopsy results. And so we sort of heard the biopsy results, and it turned out it was cancer. But fortunately, in my case, they were able to get the whole thing out. And, it made for an interesting story.
Wow. 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 And how does somebody find out about kidney cancer?
I apologize because the helicopter's come back into range here. So can you hit me with that again?
How does someone find out about kidney cancer? What are the signs?
Well, in my case, it was totally accidental. I have to have a medical issue, and I found that I'm not so my doctor, just in the process of being thorough, said, why don't we give you a CAT scan? And they said, well, the CAT scan, by the way, it doesn't tell us anything about what you're going to look like, but we happen to find a tumor there.
Yeah.
And so it was a coincidence, and I still have the numbness problem, but I'm kind of grateful for it now because it helped find the cancer. So it was a kind of a pure accident. Now, one of the things I talk about in the story is there are other symptoms. Tired here. You can have problems with urine, and there's some other symptoms. And I did have some of the symptoms I missed. And to me, that was kind of one of the important reasons for doing the story, was to be able to kind of convey this to other people. And one of the main things about doing the story was, the day it aired, and in the following 2 or 3 days, I got more than 100 emails from listeners, which was wonderful. But I talked to several other people. And two people actually told me that, you know, because of that, they actually had gone in and found out they had a similar problem. And so that, for me, it was gratifying to know that I could perhaps help somebody else going through the same thing.
And Lance, I'm afraid that you're cutting in and out so badly that we're going to have to continue the conversation another time.
Well, thank you very much. I apologize for that. And unfortunately, as the news goes, we have to be up there on the fire line. This is one of those days.
Yes. And I appreciate you taking the time. I'll arrange with you another conversation. Thank you, Lance Orozco, who's the news director with KCLU, which is the local NPR affiliate here in Southern California. So interestingly enough, he's responding to the fire. And why? Because there's a there's a fire going on. So if you didn't hear that, it's the 101 southbound is backed up, and the other one, he said the northbound was doing okay. So this award, which is called the Sigma Delta Chi Award, Excellence in Journalism, they had 1,700 submissions, and the judges selected 84 honorees. And it's at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. on June 21st, so it's a big deal. So it's called My Cancer, including recordings from Orozco's surgery and the appointment where he received the biopsy results. And earlier this year, he received 2 Golden Mike Awards from the Radio and Television News Association of Southern California for the story. So if you couldn't hear, I apologize for that. He was cutting in and out, but he said one of the motivation for the story was because he was going through it, and he's followed other people go. He does feature stories a lot. So he's had followed other people in their lives and asked them questions and asked them to open up their stories. And he said that he felt that it was only right that he do the same for others, which I think is actually marvelous and magnificent of him to have done that. We're going to have another guest later on in maybe 10 minutes or so that's going to be speaking with us about domestic abuse and pregnancy, which doesn't seem like that would be something that goes together. But she contacted me. She lives actually in the UK, and I'm open to all kinds of stories. So she calls this pregnancy a time of elation or stress and anxiety. And she's got 5 reasons why domestic violence is higher during pregnancy and when a new baby is born instead of a time for elation and joy for some women, which I can't imagine. I mean, having had 4 babies myself, it's like that. Those are the 4 best days in my life was when I gave birth to my children, because I was born to be a mother. I'm Catholic, and so when I was little and I was in Catholic school, I thought I was going to be a nun. And then when I realized, no, that's not going to happen, then I knew I was going to be a wife and mother. And so mother I have been, wife I have been too, not successfully, but that's, you know, it happens. So we get to share with you this story that is going to be coming out on May 20th in the issue of Fortune magazine from Warren Buffett. So, of course, Warren Buffett is wildly known for his billions of self-made money and for his frugality in his life and his style. And before I get into the piece, because he really celebrates women, I'm just going to give you a little bit of background about him. He's 82. His birthday is in August. He was born the same year as my dad, basically. He was born in Omaha, Nebraska, the second of 3 children. In 1942, his father was elected to the first of 4 terms in the United States Congress, and he moved with his family to Washington, D.C. He always displayed an interest in making and saving money. Now, I did that, too, early on. I used to get a dime a week for allowance, and I'd save it until I had enough dollars, and I wouldn't deposit it into the bank. But Capricorns were known for that. So he went door-to-door selling chewing gum, Coca-Cola, or weekly magazines. For a bit, he worked in his grandfather's grocery store. When he was in high school, he made money by delivering newspapers, selling golf balls, stamps, and detailing cars. He filed his first income tax form in 1944, and he took a $35 deduction for the use of his bicycle and his watch for his paper route. In his sophomore year of high school, he and a buddy spent $25 and they bought a used pinball machine, which they put into a local barber shop. Within months, they owned several machines in different barber shops. Get this, at the age of 10, on a visit to New York City, he made it a point to go to the New York Stock Exchange. And at the age of 11, he bought his first stocks, 3 shares of Citi's Service Preferred for himself and 3 for his sister. He entered Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania as a freshman, and after 2 years, he transferred to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, where he graduated at the age of 19 with a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration. He went to Columbia Business School and earned a Master of Science degree in Economics, and he also attended the New York Institute of Finance. And here is his take on investing. The quote, "The basic ideas of investing are to look at stocks as business, use the market's fluctuations to your advantage, and seek a margin of safety." That's what he was taught. And he was taught that by Benjamin Graham, who is the author of The Intelligent Investor, and it's one of Warren Buffett's favorite books on investing. 100 years from now, they will still be the cornerstones of investing. So fast forward in his life, he meets and marries a woman, Susan. They met in married in 1952, and they have three children who are still alive. And she occasionally performed as a singer, and under the encouragement of singer-songwriter musician Neil Sedaka, he encouraged her to pursue a singing career. So she left her husband and moved to San Francisco in 1977. So I don't know if people know this. I found out this, I think, after she passed away. They never divorced. And my guess, I think, must be because of the billions of dollars involved. And they remained on good terms. So before she moved full-time to San Francisco, Susan, Warren Buffett's wife, introduced a woman to Warren Buffett. Her name is Astrid Mentz. My understanding is, I didn't get the time to research this, that Astrid was a waitress at a diner. So she basically said, I think you guys are going to enjoy each other. She scooted off to San Francisco to pursue her career. She vacationed with him. They showed up publicly as a couple, and oftentimes as a trio. So they even signed Christmas cards, Warren, Susan, and Astrid. So this Astrid moved into their home in Omaha after Susan left, and Susan ended up passing away in 2004. So she was diagnosed with oral cancer. She underwent surgery, radiation therapy, and facial reconstruction. Warren flew out from Omaha to be with her every weekend during her recovery. And the couple later donated $6 million to five California doctors for the study of oral cancer. So she died at the age of 72 after suffering a cerebral hemorrhage. So she didn't die from the cancer. And Bono performed Forever Young and All I Want Is You at her funeral. They said that Warren was so grief-stricken that he did not attend the funeral. So what an interesting story that is. So he's in the news today because of this article that's going to be published. And I'm going to read you just one of the, I'll read you the first sentence. "In the flood of words written recently about women and work, one related and hugely significant point seems to me to have been neglected. It has to do with America's future, about which I'm an unqualified optimist. Now entertain another opinion of mine. Women are a major reason we will do so well." So he goes through the background of our country since 1776 and what our forefathers set up. And he says, "Our secret sauce has been a political and economic system that unleashes human potential to an extraordinary degree. As a result, Americans today enjoy an abundance of goods and services that no one could have dreamed of in just a few centuries. But for most of our history, women, whatever their abilities, have been relegated to the sidelines, and only in recent years have we begun to correct that problem." So he talks about the 19th Amendment, where we got the right to vote, and then he talks about the fact that since that was passed, 33 men rose to the Supreme Court before Sandra Day O'Connor made the grade, as he calls it, 61 years after the amendment was ratified. And he talks about how we are not represented, not even 50% in other things. So his point is that there are women who are just as capable as men and who need to be able to be relegated, delegated, appointed, elected, whatever it takes to get them into the places where they can make a difference. "Too many women continue to impose limitations on themselves, talking themselves out of achieving their potential." And then he goes on to talk about one of the most brilliant and interesting women he's ever known is the late Katharine Graham. And, of course, longtime controlling shareholder and CEO of the Washington Post and Watergate and all of that stuff. He says she doubted herself the entire time. And he calls it the funhouse mirror. Stop looking at the funhouse mirror and not seeing your potential. And so he said to her, I told her to discard the funhouse mirror that other had set before her and view her instead a mirror that reflected the reality. Then I said, you will see a woman who is a match for anyone, male or female. And he says, proof is on the side that the Washington Post stock went up more than 4,000% during her 18 years as boss. After retiring, she won a Pulitzer Prize for her autobiography, but her self-doubt remained, a testament to how deeply a message of unworthiness can be planted in even a brilliant mind. So his final sentences are, fellow males, get on board. The closer that America comes to fully employing the talents of all of its citizens, the greater its output of goods and services will be. We've seen what can be accomplished when we use 50% of our human capacity. If you visualize what 100% can do, you'll join me as an unbridled optimist about America's future. Again, that's published this month, May 20th, in the issue of Fortune magazine. So now I'm going to attempt to get our next guest on the line, and we're going to see how my technology is going to work here. Okay, no. So let me play this so you can listen to this while I fiddle around. Hi, good morning. It's Maria. One moment. There. My technical acumen is being challenged.
I was listening to you earlier.
So how are you? Good morning or good afternoon to you.
I am well, thank you. And you?
I am fabulous. And we have on the line with us our guest, and before I, Felicity Okolo, is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Ah, I am notorious for butchering names, so I apologize for that. And you are on the other side of the pond in the UK.
Yes, I am.
And your story is a tragic one, but unfortunately it's not isolated. And your title, Pregnancy, a Time of Elation or Stress and Anxiety, do you mind sharing with our listeners? And thank you very much, by the way, for your bravery in doing this.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you go ahead with your story, please.
Right, my story. Well, why I suggested the title, because I experienced domestic violence while I was pregnant. I got married at age 19 to a man that I didn't know, total stranger. So it was kind of arranged marriage. And I was in Nigeria, where I was from originally, before I moved to the UK. And I joined him soon afterwards, and I was pregnant when I came. And 3 months after I had the baby, the first incident happened. I went on to have 2 more children with this man. I was married to him for 4.5 years, and during this period I experienced both physical, emotional, psychological, financial, social isolation. Whatever kind of abuse, you just name it, I experienced it. And till it got to a point when I thought to myself, if I don't leave, I'm going to die. I'll be killed, or I'll kill myself. Either way, I'll be dead. And my kids will be left without a mom. So I decided one night when he threatened to hit me so badly, I had to leave. I ran out of the house, and he chased me. And this was in winter, November. November, so, and this was about 3 a.m. in the morning. He chased me, actually, left the baby, chased me. But he didn't find me, luckily. I drove so quickly, hid the car, and slept in the car till about 7 a.m. that morning before going to my neighbors and telling them what happened and vowing never to return to the house. all I wanted was my children. And 2 days later, I went back to get my children with the police. And I must say to other women listening to this, if you're escaping violence, never ever return to the home where you just left or where you're fleeing violence alone. Always go with the police escort. So I went back with police escort to take a few belongings that he would let me take and take my children. And that was how I left. My children at this time were 3.5 years old, 2 years old, and 5 months old.
Goodness.
And there I was in a strange country because I was just new in the UK. I didn't know how the system operated. I didn't have any family. I couldn't have friends because this man wouldn't let me have friends. So I was just so scared, not knowing what to do. And luckily, I had very good neighbors who are now were then quite good friends of mine and still friends who guided me and supported me, and have an auntie who helped me. And people, I was kind of a charity case that people were contributing to support, and the state supported me and my children. I'm glad to say that this was a long time ago. We are over that now. I am quite successful. I've written 2 books, one on my story, It Is My Life and I'm in Charge, to help other women who are going through a similar thing or who just left abuse and not knowing what to do or how to cope or survive it, that there is hope after that, definitely. Because 2 of my pregnancies, one of them experienced abuse, that my second pregnancy, the third one, and I experienced abuse while I had babies, because domestic violence is much higher during pregnancy. And when the new baby is born, especially between 0 to 18 months old.
So what do you think explains that? I mean, obviously, usually pregnancy, did a story yesterday that said that half of all pregnancies in the United States are unwanted. So I guess you've got hormones going and then you've got emotions going. But you would think that you're harboring another life, that would be sacrosanct. That, I mean, somebody wouldn't dream of doing that.
Yeah, somebody who knows what you're carrying. Somebody who knows who respects life, who mm-hmm. values life. If you understand where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But these men who abuse people, I mean, if you respect life and value life, or you love your the person you should love or be with, the people, you wouldn't want to hurt somebody else. I don't think they really care. I mean, there are several reasons or speculations why, according to research, that claim that these men, what they feel, why they actually abuse, or why domestic violence is higher during pregnancy. One of them is that the man feels that the woman wants to trap him with pregnancy, or the pregnancy is unplanned. That's one of the reasons. And number 2, they actually have this excuse that they're stressed or they're anxious about the financial implications of supporting a new baby, because the truth is they have 1 or 2 incomes in the household, 2 people, and then a third person to look after. It's kind of stressful, they claim. And thirdly, the man may be jealous that the woman's attention will be shifted from him to the baby. He's used to being looked after by the woman, and now the baby is coming. The woman is no longer able to do the things she normally does in the house, like cleaning, cooking, being available when he wants her.
Well, and that's also, not to mention the sleep deprivation and what that does.
Yes, yes. And also, he feels that he wouldn't get sex when he wants it, because if a woman is having morning sickness the first 3 months of pregnancy or during late stages of the pregnancy, she may not be readily available for sex or have the energy or well enough for that. And he feels that, because of this baby now, I have to do without what I really want. And also there could be fears that the baby may be the wrong sex, because in some part of the world where, women, they don't like, people don't like, female children.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be somebody's like, you having a female child, oh God, let's punish her. So these are kind of reasons they've seen that it's quite common all around the world, really, why domestic violence seems to be higher, even though, like you and I, it's not, to us, it's not plausible why it should be so, And women do suffer from this, because there's increase in a lot of women do tend to turn to alcohol abuse because of the stress they go through, that these men put them through. And some actually, and then there's depression, they actually will attempt suicide, because I know I attempted suicide when I was pregnant with my third baby because of just the violence. I could not stand being pregnant again and being abused. I just didn't know what to do.
So what did you do? What did you do?
I ran away.
You ran
for
away?
A day or two.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes, I ran away for a day or two, and what I did was called, there's a group in the UK called the Samaritans.
Mm-hmm.
The night I was just thinking of jumping off the bridge or something, and I tried to sleep beside the church. They wouldn't let me. I just didn't know what to do. I thought last resort was I called the police, and from the coin box, payphone, and they asked me to call the Samaritans. So I called the Samaritans. Luckily, the number was on the display box there by the phone, and then I had someone counsel me over the phone, trying to remind me of things that I should look forward to. The world is not so bad. The abuse will end soon. I should sleep on it. You know, it was so consoling. And there's somebody else on the other line who doesn't know me,
mm-hmm.
and was able to convince me not to go through with it. So I was there crying for over 20 minutes on the payphone, and I later said to her, okay, I won't do it today.
Which is all they ask for, right? You take that day by day.
I promised not to take my life that day.
Uh-huh.
And she then gave me a phone number to a shelter, a homeless shelter where I could go to spend the night because I definitely did not want to return to the house. So I called the number. They directed me to get to that place. I went over there and spent the night. The night I couldn't sleep anyway, and I was there for a day or two, and then I called my then husband.
And you were pregnant with your third one. This is when you were pregnant.
Sorry?
The
third pregnancy,
okay.
Yes. The second one, I didn't probably have the courage to leave the house. The third one, I thought, you know, after the second pregnancy, and the third one, I'm being abused. It was just too much. I decided that's when I left. I ran away for 2 days. The second day I called him, he came and picked me up. I had to leave the hostel so that he wouldn't know where I was. I left the shelter and picked me up on the street. I was so upset that I had to go back to what I was running away from in the first place.
Right.
Because as of then, I didn't know that, you know, I could get help. I was afraid because I didn't have my green card, like they say in the U.S. there, but I didn't have my leave to remain in the U.K. I was afraid what would happen. I may be deported. I was afraid that you might find me anyway. I was afraid of the cultural and traditional implication. And I heard you say you were Catholic. You're a Catholic.
Yes.
And I'm a Catholic. So the implications in the church, all these fears were going on in my mind. What will people say? What my family say or do? How will I be perceived in this society? This stigma was there. So confused, and I had to go back. So the plan, what I decided to do was go back, have this baby. If the abuse continues again, then this time around, I will not care what anyone says or what they will do. All I will care is just my life, my safety, my children's safety. And that's what happened. After I had the baby, 5 months after the baby was born, no, actually 3 months after the baby was born, he hit me so badly, I was in hospital. Now I called the police. And 5 months after he threatened so badly again, I decided, you know, this is it. That's when I escaped.
Wow. Felicity, amazing that you had to endure all of that. And plus, I understand you had, first of all, your age. You were young. Second of all, cultural issues. Third of all, you're in another country. Fourth of all, where are you supposed to turn? What are you supposed to do? And then you have the abuse on top of that. You had nothing to turn to or take relief from. I'm surprised we're having this conversation today.
Only God, I'll say. I am really grateful, and that's what I say to people. I'm really grateful, and that's why I decided. Actually, I didn't decide. I never imagined I could write my story. I never imagined that probably I'll be here. And so when I decided to do to coach, I was planning an event when I got a publicist, and I told her my story. She said to me, look here, Felicity. Why don't you tell people this story? You have a very powerful story here that people will learn from, because look at you now, where you are in your life. Why not tell your story? So, and then somebody else mentioned it to me. Then I was thinking to myself, you know, I never thought that this would benefit anyone. I thought it was a secret, like every other woman who probably has gone through abuse. They think that, don't tell anyone, keep it to yourself. Never want, try not to remember it, because there's so much information I did deleted from my memory. I didn't want to remember because it was too hurtful, mm-hmm. It was too painful.
Now, how do do your children have a relationship with their father?
Not now, not anymore, because from what has happened in the past, they tried to have a relationship with him. But from what they realized, he does not care about them. He does not care about them. From if you read my book, in the book there, he says that he never wanted the children anyway. He used me and the children to save his property because he was married to somebody else. And they were going through a divorce when he came to marry me. So in a way, this is somebody who never wanted to probably get married or have children and just used us for the wrong reasons. But regardless, abuse still happens to people that, you know, married people they really love so much, and then they change.
Right.
And during pregnancy as well, it gets worse because of this reason we talked about. In the U.S., actually, it's quite high. It's like 26% of, like, pregnancy, teenage pregnancies, they get abused by their boyfriends. And 50 to 70% of women abused before pregnancy actually are also abused during pregnancy as well.
So
the numbers.
In other words, the batterers, they don't stop regardless. There's a horrible story. I don't even know that I'm going to go into it, but we put to death somebody last night who he raped a 6-month-old baby and killed her by doing that. So. I mean, obviously, you're bad to the bone. I don't see how anybody can recover from that. Do you have any? We have like a minute left, Felicity. Is there any way for a batterer to recover, like somebody can recover from alcohol or drug dependency?
You mean the abuser?
Yes.
Or the abused?
The abuser.
Of course, if they get help, definitely the first stage of them recovering is actually acknowledging that they have a problem,
mm-hmm.
and going to get a solution. There are many places or organizations that can help men who abuse, or even women who abuse people. So they can go get help for abusers. They can get counseling if the couple want to be together. There are other ways. I'll say to women who are going through abuse during pregnancy, what they should do is avoid getting into arguments. And if you can avoid pregnancy, terrific, do that. But if you can avoid pregnancy while you're there, sometimes pregnancies are forced, actually. And I would say to protect your tummy area while you're being abused. These are just like ways of, you know, minimizing damage to the baby. The woman really wants the baby, because sometimes, a lot of times she does anyway, sometimes she doesn't. And report the abuse to the police. Sometimes women are so scared, but you have to tell someone. And sometimes, when you go to see the midwife, your doctor, or your health visitor, or whoever, you have to tell somebody. Some men actually follow women to clinics, so that they don't actually have to tell. They couldn't tell people,
mm-hmm.
what they were going through at home. So it's really it's so bad that women have to be through this. And I just want to change. I'm sure you want to change. We all want to change. Just for more women to be aware that it increases during pregnancy and when the new baby is born, and help that is available if they only tell people and know what to do.
So before we run out of time, Felicity, why don't you share how people can find you, your website and your Facebook and Twitter and whatever.
I am on Facebook, same name is Felicity Okolo. On Twitter, same thing. My website is felicityokolo.com, where you can access, people can access information about me, and I've got my books there for sale. My book is available on Amazon, or the book is available on Amazon. And from my website, I've got answered some questions on domestic violence, because I get so many questions on domestic violence. So I've done several videos people can access through my website. If you go to felicityokolo.com, all the information is there on how to access the videos and all the information and my newsletter.
And I will, when we post this to the program today, I'll post your contact information on there as well. So thank you so much for your story. Thank you for being a survivor, and thank you for being an inspiration, Felicity. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Take care. This is Maria Sanchez. You're listening to The Maria Sanchez Show on LATalkRadio.com. Anytime you miss anything, you can go to TheMariaSanchezShow.com, and you can download the episodes, and you can see what it is that we spoke about. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to visiting with you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at LATalkRadio.com and MariaSanchezShow.com.